Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
We got 36 minutes. All right. Well, here we go again. Welcome back to another episode of For Behind the Anvil with your host, me, Mike Peterson, Michael Peterson, whatever you want to call me. Just don't call me late for dinner. Tonight's episode, we have guest Dustin Rhodes of Memory, Forge of Memory, Axes on Main. Dustin Forge Works. I know I was going to let him do that, but I just spitting it out. Here we go. Squirrel time. All right, Dustin, welcome to the show. And hold on, let me get a drink.
How's it going?
It's been a long day. Can you tell?
Just a little bit.
Yeah, fun day. All right, Dustin, I'm going to turn it over to you for a minute. If you want to just give us a quick little brief bio about yourself, what you do, how you came about it, and then we just kind of just jaunt on from there.
Okay, very cool. My name is Dustin Rhodes. I am the owner of Dustin Rhodes Forge Works LLC. And our business here in St. Elmo, Illinois is Axes on Main Forge of Memory. We are a member of the Forge of Memory family that was started by Robbie Bowman, another Forged and Fire alumni, Forged and Fire fan favorite, seasons 3 and 4, episodes 5. Myself, I was on season 4, episode 2 of Forged and Fire. I was on season 1, episode 1 of Master of Arms, the Flintlock Axe Pistol.
Where they had and, nice little boxes so you could look taller. Sorry. Had to throw that out
now. Here, I'll drop this down so it makes me look taller.
There you go.
There we go.
Of course, that camera angle helps make things look taller as well.
Oh, yeah. So I've been a bladesmith for about 32 years. I'm a full-time bladesmith. Cheyenne Brown, she also works here in the shop. And she was on season 9, episode 5. We've sent 3 people from the shop to Forged in Fire. And everyone's been pretty successful in it. Mike, you've been to the shop, actually. For our first grudge match that we had. And I do a lot of Frontier-style knives, Bowie knives, tomahawks. I also do swords. I do a little bit of everything. And this is who I am. This is what I do. And
as he sits, I'm okay with behind that. The anvil.
Well, I figured I'd sit here, you know, behind the anvil because I'm like, yeah. Well, if I move a little bit, you can see the forge and all the fun stuff behind me. But
well, you know, that kind of plays off the name behind the anvil.
Behind the anvil. I mean, you said behind the anvil, so I'm behind the anvil right here.
Here we go. So I know you've done a lot of interviews and a few other things. We're going to try not to copy those. What are some stuff that you wanted to talk about that, you know, didn't get brought up or afterwards, like, damn it, because, you know, I've done the same thing. It's like, oh, I should have talked about that. Let's dive in a little bit more on something like that. Maybe kind of what particular knife that you like to do yourself the most, it's just the kicks and thrills of, you know, I like doing this, wish I could do a lot more.
Well, you know, I think the one specific design that I would like to do a lot more of is the same one that every bladesmith wants to do a lot more of, and that's the one that sells for the most and the most often. True. You know, it's not a specific design. Now, if I said, you know, hey, the knife I like making the most is, it's probably going to be like a recurve Bowie, kind of on the larger side, something that you have the additional leverage of the recurve. You've still got that serpentine style and, you know, just something that I enjoy making. It's functional art. And sometimes we do copper blades. We do primitive copper blades. Other times we do meteorite Damascus. We do re reverse
Excuse me.
falchion, weird stuff. And when it comes down to it, what do I like the most? I like a utilitarian blade that is reasonably priced, that I can sell day in, day out, and every day, because that's how I pay my bills, but that's also how I make enough money to be able to go do the weird, cool stuff I like to do, like meteorite Damascus and other stuff like that. So,
Speaking of meteorite Damascus, I still wish I had a picture. Everyone says, "Yeah, oh, you thought I'd just bring you a little tiny chunk to try." No, I brought him about a pound and a half of meteorite is what he ended up getting.
yep.
Here, dropped it in hand. You're like, "Oh, yeah." So.
Well, funny that you would mention that, because I've actually got the knife I made from that over there in a case. It was published in Knives 2023, which you and Daisy also got
Yes,
published
sir.
in.
Yep.
So yeah, I put that to good use. I actually sent a little bit of it out to Ryu Lim for, I don't know if I sent it to him for his birthday or just because, but
I know we talked
You know
about
how
how
it is with
you
bladesmiths. Hey, I got something weird. You got to try this,
try
man.
it.
It's like being around hippies. Hey, man, you got to try this. JDCRV
Speaking of steel, I'm glad you brought that up. So, a purpose of this show is not only talk about knives, we give a little education as well. What steels are you kind of more fond to play with? I mean, for me, it'd be like 5160, mainly Damascus. Cable right now is one of my favorites. I used to do 01, oh, used to use, excuse me, 01 tool steel and A36. Never really liked it. I just did it because that's kind of what dad did. I didn't really start playing with weird stuff until later on life and getting into 5160. I'd have to say 5160 and cable Damascus is my favorite with a little 15 and 20. What kind of steel do you kind of prefer as your kind of go-to? I know you're like me a little bit. You kind of look at that scrap out. Ooh, that's gonna make a cool knife. So.
Well, Mike, you're right. When it comes down to doing repurposed blades, I mean, I think I've got a fair amount of spring steel right behind me here in front of the forge on the ground. Rasp and files, especially doing the frontier style, I do use up a lot of those. I use a lot of buggy spring and leaf spring. So when it comes down to virgin stock, what I like to use 5160. 9260 is a favorite of mine as well. But going into simplistic steels like 1095, 1080, I like using 1080 for swords because it is forgiving, but I'm not worried as much about edge retention with a sword as, I mean, to me it's more of an edge club.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it's got to be able to take the force and the torque and so forth. So what I would look at, I mean, a lot,
Even
I've been
1075
getting
would
some
be
1085 from Pops and doing some cool Hamones with that.
Shout out to Pop's
I like the
Knife
way it works.
Supply.
I like the way it looks once I'm done. I started using 80CRV2 recently. A lot of my friends, I know Spicy Mike had been using that for a bit, but I got an order for something, so I said, "Hey, I got to order." I always make it a point, order at least twice as much steel as what you need in case something doesn't go right. Not maybe not wrong, but doesn't quite go right. Maybe you want to go a different direction. 1095 is a favorite of mine, just because 1095 is tried and true. It stood the test of time, and I think about it, how many old hickories I've had that. I think about how many of my grandma had that, when it came down to butchering a deer or much anything else, something that's easy to resharpen, holds a good edge, and just overall a good utilitarian steel. Now, 1095, if you want to get a Hamone on that, you can. If you don't soak it long enough, you can get some interesting carbide banding
Migration,
in
yep.
that, which looks cool, but I mean, at the same time, I mean, you've got the artistry of it, but you're also going, "Hey, I didn't do my heat treat maybe quite the way I should have done it." But
Yeah. I got to issue a correction. I think I said episode 3 at the beginning. This is actually episode 4. So my correction on that, folks. I paper at the beginning probably listening. Did he just say episode 3? We already had an episode 3. This is episode 4. So sorry about that, Dustin. I just had
Oh,
to
it's
issue
all
a
good.
correction there.
Now, as far as
Like I said,
like
it's a
past,
Monday.
oh, it happens usually once a week here.
Right.
Sometimes it's Monday for weeks at a time, I think.
I've been there, done that.
Now, as far as like doing pattern welded, I mean, I think my first pattern welded was either some mild steel and a file steel folded up, and I kind of got away from the high carbon, low carbon, except for with the meteorite Damascus, where you've got the nickel iron meteorite that's pretty well devoid of carbon, but it's still some tough stuff. It really is. With some cool patterns, and it's just kind of unique, you know. It came from space, so hey,
Right.
why
It's
wouldn't you?
high in iron and nickel, and I can't remember what else. That particular meteorite I gave you was some pretty interesting. It came out of Brazil, and it had all the it has all the great alloys you want in for meteorite to forge, you know, forge weld. But this stuff does not like, if you have it just on the surface, and Dad would like what he does, he'll just stack it up in a bar. And forge weld it. When he first used part of it, it drove him nuts trying to get it to forge weld together, and it just kind of come apart. I found with this particular meteorite, if you put it in a canister with a 1095 powder, forge weld it down like that. I grind lightly the canister off a little bit, just leaving a little film with a mild steel jacket around there, and then stack it back up to kind of give it a little oxygen barrier. So that's what I'd done, and it worked out pretty good, and it looks really interesting. And by the time you worked it down and everything and folded it a few times, that mild steel works its way out. Comes part of the steel, gives a little texture, but you can still see a lot of the meteorite.
I mean, like I do a lot of I do a lot of, you know, just combining different high carbon steel, 15 and 20, 1095 or 1080, something like, you know. But also I messed around with a few things. The canister, absolutely. I completely agree with you on doing that meteorite up as canister. It seemed to work best. Now, the first time I did it, I used way too much meteorite.
Not enough
And
powder.
yeah, I had to draw it out some more, clean it up, and then I did it in a second canister, and yeah, it worked out pretty good. Well, by the time I was done, I think I had about $3,500 in the first blade. So it was, hey, it's award-winning. It got published multiple times, and I'm proud of that piece. I really am, and I appreciate that, you know, that material,
You're welcome.
Mike. Now,
It's got an interesting
sometimes,
Hanna material on it too.
yeah, it's human femur, and like that particular piece, it's weird, you know. And it's a shock value piece. Why did I do it? Because people are still talking about it. It got me published.
Exactly.
Everyone will be like, you've got to be kidding me. That can't be legal. And it's like, well, if you've got two legs, you've got two femurs. So it's not illegal to have. It's just a matter of how you acquire it, you know. And if you don't pay your bill in
Yeah.
here, I might
Yeah.
get some
You
more.
acquire it legally if you're a retired
Yeah,
specimen.
retired medical specimens. Now, probably the most unusual Damascus I've done, next to the meteorite Damascus, was actually what I call spirit Damascus. I already mentioned that I've got human bones, so I actually took the interior of it, and while I was drilling it out, I saved that powder,
The
that powdered
marrow,
human
yeah.
bone, and I included that in with the flux. Now, did it actually do anything? Probably not, but it's just that really, you know, that unusual
Well,
factor. I did get a clean weld. I did.
if you and you did have a little bit of a crack in that, or was that Cheyenne's? I remember there was a crack in, so I think maybe it was Cheyenne where it escaped out, kind of made some moaning noise or something. Now, when you do, when you're talking about carb, the calcium and the carbon, when you can actually carbonize bone when you heat it up, it burns all the impurity, leaves carbon. There is carbon in our bones, which can over a period, long period of time, absorb into the steel. So technically, some of that bone could have been absorbed on a carbon-based level, absorbed in that steel if you let it soak long enough as you're working it, which you use a propane forge, which your time going to take a little longer to soak, and it would probably draw that in.
Absolutely. Well, and the other thing is, if like in some of it that I did, I started with a bar at 1095, and then I stacked up fossil Damascus about it, and then mixed some of that that bone in with the 1095 powder, and then fluxed over the top. So it was almost like you would do canister, but without a canister.
Didn't you do, was it, no, was it Cheyenne? She did the, if I remember correctly, it's been a couple of years since you guys done this. I think she tried a little bit, but I think she used a canister on hers, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, she did. They claim that calcium can help carbon absorption into steel. So I figured, hey, that's maybe got something to it. But more than anything, it was the artistry. Now Cheyenne, she does some weird stuff. Like she did a fossil Damascus blade that was a Viking sack style that had original Viking knife blades that had been excavated. We had to
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Clean those up real good, but she took those and folded them up, did them as a canister
That turned out
initially.
really nice. I think she added a little meteorite that from that in as
Yep,
well.
there's a little bit of meteorite in that one too from that build, so
I got a
it
fly buzz
ended
in
up
my
being a
head.
really unique blade.
Well, we're coming down about halfway through. Earlier you said something about Frontier. Frontier being like in back when the fur trade and everything else, the mountain man, the black
Westward
powder.
expansion and so forth, yeah.
One thing is kind of cool that I learned here a few years ago, when the fur trade started and everything, there wasn't really a whole lot of custom knives out there. I mean, you had guys in the frontier homesteads, they would make something what they would make out of a knife or a blacksmith. But when these guys were starting the fur company, like the Rocky Mountain Fur Company, I can't remember the there was like two or three others, I think. But don't
Hudson
quote
Bay.
Hudson Bay, yep. That's a Canadian Canucks. Sorry, did I say that out loud?
I think you sneezed.
Something like that. Anyway,
There we go.
they didn't really have the only kind of cutlery they kind of had to start out with was actually just what was coming out of Europe. I don't really think there was a lot of manufacturing of knives in the States at the time. I could be wrong again. A lot of those were kitchen cutlery knives, butcher knives that they would get from that was brought in such form to turn them loose out in there. And later on, as they went through the years and they built, they finally picked up different things. A lot of guys did use a lot of flint, the cape and such like that as well, because that knife was pretty valuable because they give me a minute before they could get back in there and get another one or something.
Well, yeah, and when we look at the tradition in blacksmithing and bladesmithing, the upcycling, the repurposing, the recycling, however you want, hey, do you really need a sword you captured on the battlefield if you already have one? Perhaps you pick up a couple of them. You've got good steel right there, and it's not hard to take that to your company smith or the local blacksmith and get another knife made or trade it up, and there's documentation of the natives furrowing axe heads with sandstone, basically just abrading it until it cuts it in two, and then taking those pieces and using them as celts. So taking a full-size axe head and cutting it down into three or four celts and doing the same thing with swords, take that and start working it. You think about how many hide scraper blades you could get out of a saber blade, just like well, I mean, for comparison, let's say something like the size of an 1840, but it's going to be much, something much earlier, but something that's not like a wrist breaker, which was quite long. And I did have an awesome original 1840 that I wish I would have kept, but it comes down to paying bills sometimes if you get injured. So that's
Yes,
one of those
sir.
stories. But I think that in general, as we expanded westward and as we expanded into the frontier, that there were those who were probably doing some iron smelting, and a lot of it was also probably coming from
St.
more
Louis.
than anything, hey, a wagon comes in with some broken springs or just whatever comes in. Hey, what do you got to trade? Well, I've got a couple files here, or at that time you're dealing with simple shallow hardening carbon steels and wrought iron. You're going to have your wrought iron that was used for wagon bands, what wagon wheel tires
Yeah,
essentially.
the
And
rough
then going
iron.
up there, I think there were three or four different grades of iron, if I remember. I was talking to Eric Carlson. I was on Master of Arms with. He was an apprentice gunsmith at Colonial Williamsburg, and he was telling me about the different grades of iron, and it was actually going from wrought iron on up to steel. And that, of course, that wasn't counting cast iron or anything like that. But I mean, at times I still work with wrought iron. I've got some wrought iron horseshoe knives. I'm going to put that in quotations, knives. That's the shape they are. I wouldn't want to, if that's the only thing I had, I imagine that'd be okay. But that's not the only thing I have, so I'm pretty happy with having
So,
access to good
and
steel.
you mentioned something a little bit about blacksmithing. You've done some of that. I remember you were telling me when you first bought the farmhouse, you guys were had a little coal shed and such like that, and then needed to get things taken care of. And you guys went out there, and you and Liz went out there and just hammered out, and spent all day in the coal shed burning some dirty coal there and punching out
Oh yeah.
whatever you could punch out and everything. What got you into blacksmithing side of things a little bit? We know, we kind of know from other things you talked about in the past of other shows, all the
Well,
bladesmithing, but what got you into the blade, the blacksmithing end of it?
being poor. What got me into it was being poor. I remember when I was younger, oh my God, we got a hold of a Smoky Mountain Knife Works catalog. And there was all this cool stuff that I couldn't afford, And well, just by chance, my family got into frontier reenactment, hence my favoritism towards frontier style pieces. Everybody had a trade. So I was like, well, there's people making leather goods, there's people doing bead work, there's people doing all these different trades, and some of them were just demonstrating cooking or over the campfire or whatever. And I was like, I'm gonna be a blacksmith. This is cool, man. I'm gonna be able to make the stuff that I can't afford to buy. And nowadays I'm like, if I want it, I guess I can go make it. But at the same time, then I'm gonna have to sell it because that's what I do. But how I got into it was actually Rendezvous's Frontier Reenactment. And I still go to some of them. I still go to some of the gun and craft shows and so forth. But more than anything, it's kind of it's layered up, because the blacksmith at one point was the foundation of society. If
Yes.
you're going to have some form of society, you probably need someone who can make weapons or tools, who can repair metallic items that break, a good person to have around, So either
Exactly.
when there's war, you either capture that person or you do away with that individual.
Which most likely they captured unless he fought back and they had to do away with him.
If you make good axes and swords, hey, we want him to go make good axes and swords with us. We'll give him some chicken, some beer, and a couple winches, and we're good.
You went to recently last June, you went to Blade Show in Atlanta there. I wish you could have went, but we're kind of stuck out here in the way in the West, and things been a little tight on my end, but we'll get back to traveling again here soon. Our friend Albert, not even going to try to say his last name, I'll murder him.
Mitrinsky.
Yes, sent you
Dr.
a
Big and Scary. Good
sent
guy.
you something really cool to forge down. I believe it was a 50 caliber barrel. Within 2 minutes, within a couple of minutes, kind of describe what it was like to forge that down and everything.
Okay, so first thing I did was I was like, okay, I have worked with gun barrels before. I've worked with wrought iron barrels. I've worked with chrome moly barrels. And so first thing I did was I looked it up to see what it might be, because I'm like, it's got to be something that I can turn into something useful. And the research I did said that it was most likely something similar to 4140. Now, 4140 is generally something I would use to make
Hammer dies and
axes, hardy tools, punches, drifts, something to that effect. And I was like, well, I can make a blade out of it. It's not going to be the most desirable blade as far as edge retention, but I can make something cool out of it. So I thought about it and I was like, well, Albert's friends with Doug. And I'll make a couple karambits and a couple different things. One of my biggest issues, I tried to clean that barrel out because I wanted to make a tomahawk head out of it. Well, there had been enough 50 caliber rounds that I'm assuming must have been either copper jacketed. I've heard a lot of them are bronze, but copper alloyed. And welding with copper remnants does not work well.
no.
With copper in the forge, you're not going to weld well. And so I actually took a section of Atlas Knife and Tool Railroad Spike, which is 1078 high carbon. It's made from 1080, tested at 1078. They said it's a little more exotic, so hey, so I call it 1078. The 1078 spike, I could not get it to weld. I actually, trying to forge it, forge weld it together, managed to forge the rifling pattern into the center core of that
Nice.
1078. And what I decided was to abandon that. I did finish one out, had to use a lot of fill wire, filler material and so forth. Wasn't real happy with that, but I did make a spike tomahawk head out of it. Did a couple
Nice.
karambits that looked pretty cool. And when I did those up, I went ahead and I split a section of the barrel. And had rifling on one side, was still evident,
Nice. Yes,
which I
that's
could have
very
cleaned
cool.
down. And I tried it on another test piece, and yeah, it can clean down. So I've got a little material left, and I'm actually thinking about taking it, forging it out into bars, and grinding it all clean so that there's no chance of there being any copper or copper alloy remnants on this, and maybe try to sonmai it up. I don't know that I'd want to do it as Damascus, just because I feel that if I'm doing it as sonmai and it doesn't take, it's going to be less frustrating than folding up a billet and then just realizing that I have a metallic sponge of cold shuts,
Nice.
know?
True. So we're going to kind of get, we're getting close on time here. Will you take the next 5, 6 minutes, where we want to try to keep this a little more educational at some points, even though we might go squirrel, squirrel, kind of like call them the squirrel moments. That's what I'm trying to label them here. Kind of, I don't know, either, people that are out there that's watched the show and everything, we've all got it. Hey, that'd be cool. I want to try to get into it. I get that all the time. Where do I start? We both offer knife making classes. You offer your Forge of Memory, come down railroad spike. That's some people I tell them, come try that and we'll step up in blacksmith knife and then we'll go up to the bigger class. Then take the next 5 minutes and kind of just point out what would, from your standpoint, I know I've talked about a lot, but I'm going to turn it over to you. Educational, getting into it, or just whatever comes to your mind.
As far as like doing the classes and so forth, where should somebody start? I mean, that's what we offer is the Forge of Memory locations, and not only are you forging memory, but you're also doing fun stuff like getting a chance without it fully investing into a full blacksmith setup to go to do something creative. Is it a matter of where a person should start? I started forging in a hole in the ground, forcing air to solid fuel and making some cool stuff happen. And I've got to say, for one, that knowledge is power. I remember hearing that when I was watching Saturday morning cartoons as a kid. And it really is. It's about knowing whatever you are committing yourself to, whatever you're doing there, you could go further. Education is a wonderful thing if you use it. And being educated about your processes, about your material, and being able to pass that on to others, that's something that I've strived for. And I truly believe this, that if you truly believe that you have mastered, whether it's martial arts, whether it's a craft, whether whatever you're an ed if you're an educator and you think you've mastered it all, then you've really become closed-minded at that point. You're not still open-minded and open-minded enough to be
More
learning
flexible.
more. Flexibility on that, and so let's look at that from a bladesmith standpoint. If your blade is not flexible enough, it can break and it can fail. Absolutely. If you haven't opened your mind enough to try different techniques that you may or may not succeed in, I mean, the meteorite Damascus, my first attempt was, I did it, but it was frustrating. I mean, it really was, but I figured it out. And we talked a lot on that, on different techniques.
And I think what your chat, and I'll cut you off, but bring it back to that. What you did originally was take and made a box out of 1095 and put the meteorite inside, thinking that we could just
Initially,
contact it,
I
weld
did
it
try to
some,
keep it
but
as high carbon as I could. Yeah. And I changed it up going back to, So that's where you could tell me something that that's going to further my education and my processes. And I truly believe that if you're learning from someone who has experience, the ability to teach, which is, it's a talent in itself. But if you have the proper setup to where you can learn and you can not struggle, you've got the right tooling, essentially. The right tooling and the right instruction, then a person can go far and they can advance a lot faster. And I love teaching, whether it's someone coming in to do a railroad spike knife experience, or they want to learn about doing Damascus, or just furthering their craft and keeping the craft alive. That's where it comes in to really comes into full circle, because we're only here for so long.
I had a gentleman who here over a year ago took a class. He took a blacksmith knife class, just wanted to get a little taste of it, see what it's like, because he's seen the show, seen me on shows, seen my work before, heard about it, booked a class, took it, loved it. A year later called me up, hey, I got some knives I'd like to bring over and have you look at and give your opinion, kind of critique it a little. I said, sure, come over. And he caught the bug after that. And I was like, he
Yep.
came in, showed what he had from his first knife, him and his son worked on, and him and his son worked on a couple together. And I was like, wow, I was impressed. I even put pictures of it, him and his son on, and the picture of the knives. I says, how much do you spend so far? He says, I don't want to talk about it. And same with Sam. Sam did the same thing. He come took it. Well, I think he's into it so far after buying a hammer and everything else. He's into it about 8 grand and still got more to spend, so
Yeah, I remember just after I did Forged in Fire, I was getting a lot of orders and I was selling a lot more and for more money, and I was taking that money, rolling it back into the shop. And I'd have people come in and they'd be like, oh wow, well, I could have picked this power hammer up for 1500, but I thought it was high. And I was like, do you realize how many tens of thousands of dollars a year I spend on this at the time, as I was building, as I was buying more forges, more anvils, more tooling, power hammer press. And then you've got to feed the beast. So you've got to look at your consumables. Like, your fuel, your materials. It makes a huge difference. It really does.
So any parting wisdom? We've got a couple minutes left here, and then I'm going to jump in and kind of walk us out of here. Any parting in the next 2 minutes? Any parting words of wisdom?
There is no, there's no gain without risk.
True.
Be safe about it, but don't be afraid to try a new technique. We work in a, we work in a career. We work in a job set that you're going to bleed, get burnt, and possibly sever something. Don't do that. Because it yeah,
Or
right.
stab yourself in front of a customer that might pass out. We'll save that story for another time. That was.
Yeah, that was I remember that one. That was a cool story. A friend of mine, we'll call him, for his anonymity, I'll call him Bike Meterson. Similar to his name, but not quite. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, be creative. Be
Yes.
creative, make awesome things. Live a good life. Help others.
When you can. Don't extend yourself when you can't quite do it either.
Don't spread the butter too thin on the toast. That's
Yeah,
right.
that's true. Awesome. Well, appreciate Dustin for reaching out. I hope we get I this is again number four episode, not number three. So coming up next on the next episode, I believe we're gonna get Cheyenne on season on episode five here. Yeah, I want to build this up. It's behind the anvil. Tonight we were more bladesmithy than our last couple episodes. never know where the squirrel's going to take us, where we're going to jump down that rabbit hole. Love to get you back on here when we can spend a little more time. And you guys need to plan out for a trip to get out here. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I can't think of anything else. I'm going to stop this clock because I do have the little thing. So, but as we say here in the shop, America, stay shop, America. I screwed that up again. I'll get better at this. So again, trying new things, learning how to do things.
Repetition
So,
and practice makes you better.
yep. All right, just stay right there. I'm going to end the recording. Again, stay sharp, America. Stay tuned. Thanks. Please share this out. Send, like, share us, give us some input. What? 2 more seconds. Two guests you would like to see on this show.
I would say Josh Nikolaitis. You already said Cheyenne. So Josh Nikolaitis and actually either Lizzie or Dalton.
Hey, there we go. How about both, Leslie and Dalton?
There you go. We'll see what we can do.
All right. Well, just stay right there, bud, and we'll chit chat after this. Again, thanks, folks. Thanks for joining them behind the anvil, as you can see, as Dustin is. Thanks for joining. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Please let us know of the topics, tips, and who you would like to see on the show. Thank you much.